Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you in studio once again, and good to review a subject that you've talked about before, but it's good to have reviews occasionally.
Absolutely.
And you want to talk about the myths of estate planning. There are myths in estate planning?
Oh, yes, there are plenty of myths in estate planning.
Okay.
And, boy, we get those myths in so many different ways. For example, I belong to a national organization. It's called the National Network of Estate Planning Attorneys. And in our group, we have a character. Her name is Marge. Now, Marge is a fictitious character, but what Marge represents is the individual that knows everything, that has an answer for everything. So if you're sitting having a cup of coffee and you needed to know how to take out a stain, well, Marge knows. If you needed financial advice, well, Marge certainly knows. And if you had any questions about how to deal with your estate plan, Marge definitely knows. Now, Marge, unfortunately, she gets her information from many different sources. Primarily, Marge knows these things by experience. So she watches everybody. She watches how her next door neighbor did it. She has experiences with her own family. She watches the farmer down the street. She watches TV shows, and she probably even looks at the almighty Google for her information as well. So Marge, unfortunately, finds all these different resources and all these different experiences and starts combining them, and she is very, very happy to share her experience with you. The problem with Marge is that she loves to give information but truly does not have any expertise in any of them. So she is going by her own experience. She is going by her own knowledge and her own wisdom. And I think that if we thought about it, boy, we all know a Marge, don't we? And by the way, if your name is Marge, I'm very sorry. This is not about you personally. So
the one I know is Betty.
Betty? Oh, yes. Betty knows things too.
Betty Busybody.
Oh, yeah. See? And so we all have an example of who Marge is. And also I mentioned Google. So here's another great resource, right? Boy, you can find so much in Google. But the problem is that you can find things about a certain search topic that may not be applicable to you at all. So the myths come from our own experience. The myths of estate planning is, this is what my parents did. Well, who's to say that's best for you? Are you exactly your parents? I know we fought to not be like our parents, but now all of a sudden we're going to do everything like our parents as we age. And so where do we get our information? How do we develop the information concerning estate planning? And I've always been a proponent on the Legacy and Faith Show that we need to start, number one, as believers, with what has God placed in my heart, with what I am supposed to do, with what I have. And that is a today question, it is a tomorrow question, and it is an end-of-life question. What does our Heavenly Father want us to do? Now, from that premise, now we can take that information and say, so, now that I have better information of what I'm supposed to accomplish, I have God's vision for myself, for my family, for legacy. Now, how do I actually play that out? And by the way, Marge is not going to know. She'll give you advice. She'll pretend she knows, but we need better information. We need solid information. We need reliable information to develop a plan that God has dropped into our heart and actually will give us a nice path for us to walk the journey of having good information. So we all have a Marge. We all know Marge. We all know Betty. So we need to make sure that we're listening to the right voices in our life concerning this topic and not just a voice that we're listening to. So myths come at us from many different directions, and we need to then kind of shore this up. what are some of the myths and how do we get better information? So with that backdrop,
okay, well, I've got a list of common myths here, and the number one myth is, I don't have enough money for an estate plan, so why bother?
I've used this example many times on radio show, which is I was in a shopping line, and the person in front of me, a very nice guy, wanted and was being very courteous and turned around and just started a conversation. One of the most common things to find out about a person, well, what do you do? And so I answer, well, I'm an estate and tax attorney, and so I help people develop estate plans. And he said, well, if I had any type of an estate, I would use you. And I just go, No, there's the answer that misses one of the key components of why we do this journey. One of the key components, one of the main reasons that we do estate planning is not just dying, but it's also because we may need assistance during our lifetime. So the question or the response of, I don't have very much money, so I don't need to do estate planning, misses this critical component, which is my first job as an estate planner is to make sure that you are well taken care of during your lifetime. What do I mean by that? Well, there is, and the statistics are getting more and more, there's a high probability that at some point during your life, you will experience a health issue to where someone else will need to stand next to you and assist you. I call that disability. I don't like the word incapacitation because it's a limiting assumption. It means I can't think straight, or I'm losing my memory, or I'm not making proper holistic decisions like I used to. Okay, so incapacitation is a limiting assumption. I've had many clients have grave physical issues that they are unable to care for themselves or make the proper financial decisions or enact the proper financial decisions, and they need someone else to stand next to them during that time period. They could communicate what they wanted, but they don't have the ability to actually enact that. So they need someone else empowered next to them. So I use this general terminology called disability. If you ever experience a disability in your life, you need to have the proper documentation to make sure that someone has access to your bank accounts, can take care of your finances, and can also make the proper medical decisions for you. And specifically, if you are married, there is a bad presumption that your spouse will be next to you at the same time that you need that assistance. Who is to say that your spouse is not also experiencing a similar health crisis? Who is to say that your spouse hasn't passed away or that they were in that same accident that put you in the hospital? So relying upon a spouse, while of course that's our natural instinct, it's a bad presumption to suggest that that spouse is going to be there at the exact time that you need the assistance. So who is the next person? Who's the next person that you trust to manage your money, to pay your bills, to sell your home, to make the decision to sell your home if you can't make that decision for yourself, or to communicate with doctors and empower doctors to do specific procedures, medical procedures, to not do certain medical procedures, which could be as big of a decision or a bigger decision of what not to do versus what to do, medications and everything else. So the part about estate planning and the statement that you made was, I don't have enough money. It misses this entire component of ensuring that you, as an individual, are well taken care of during your lifetime. Because yes, estate planning, a major part of it is what happens when I die and how do we make a smooth transition? But we need to make sure that we have a smooth transition during our lifetime for two people, for ourselves and for the person who is going to step in the gap and actually assist us. So we need to make sure that we have an estate plan because everybody needs an estate plan, regardless of how much money you have, because you are your most valuable resource. You are the most valuable person that we need to take care of first. Then we can deal with the money. Money is secondary. You as an individual are too important to not do estate planning. So even if it's just out of self-preservation, we need to do good estate planning.
Okay, myth number two, I have an estate plan already. Why do I need a new one? Or maybe I got one 20 years ago.
Oh, yes. And boy, you kind of hit the nail on the head there, is that 20 years is approximately how long it takes for somebody to come back to an estate planning attorney and actually get their plan reviewed. Now, let me ask you something. How many of you have exactly the same amount of money? Your family situation is exactly the same, and everything of your life has not changed in the past 20 years. And if you raise your hand, oh yeah, that's me, I don't believe it, because every single person has experienced that over the past 20 years, dramatic things have changed. Goodness gracious, over the past 2 years, dramatic things have changed, let alone the past 20 years. So there is this misconception that if I do my deed, if I do my good deed, if I do this task, if I make the check mark next to getting documents, that somehow those documents are going to rescue me or rescue the estate at the time when they're needed. But this doesn't give due value or proper position of things change very quickly. Now, as an estate and tax planner, I watch the law. That's my job. So I watch taxes. I watch the law. I know for many of you, you can't imagine watching taxes or the law. I get it. Somehow God has created me that actually excites me. So that's good then. Okay. So I watch this stuff. And as you already intuitively know, there are numerous tax things that are always shifting. They're always changing. So if you intuitively know that the tax law is constantly changing, and by the way, you also intuitively know that laws constantly change. So if we know these things and you have a plan that is 5, 10, 15, 20 years old, then there is a gap between what you intuitively know and what your actions are actually doing. So having a 5, 10, 15, 20-year plan, we know that it is well outdated, both personally, what our lives have done, what our finances have done, what the family has gone through, and you intuitively know that the tax law and the legal issues have dramatically changed in those years, even though you may not know what those are. Well, I don't know what has changed in your family. So there is a disconnect between me having the knowledge of the new tax and the new laws and you having all of the knowledge about your family. Well, there has to be a review process that you need to embark on with your estate planning attorney that will review these things to make sure that the documents you have are updated. Look, I don't want an emergency to happen and have a five-year-old plan that all of a sudden I wish was updated with the new laws from last year or from the past couple of years. It's not the place I want to be. And I promise you, you don't want to pass away. You don't want to die with a plan that is 5, 10, 15, and 20 years old, because that is not going to be the most efficient and effective document to guide your family to your desires, to what God has placed in your heart, nor will it be the most current relevant document so that the person that you trust, whether it's for your health needs or whether it's for closing your estate, we want them to have the most up-to-date documents, because we want the smoothest transition so that they can work easily and in the best environment. So there's a disconnect between what we intuitively know versus our actions. We need to get things updated more often.
Okay, looking at the myths of estate planning this week with Paul Grant on the Legacy and Faith Show. If you're intrigued listening today, you want to know more about Paul's services, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, ways to ask questions, and upcoming educational sessions so that we can talk more about this journey of estate planning.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show this week with Paul Grant, looking at myths of estate planning. We left off on, I have an estate plan already. I have one I've had for 20 years.
Right.
And you've done some research on that with banks, evidently.
I have. And so when I first started my practice, I went to a good 25 banks or so in the area, all within a couple miles of my office. And I asked them, hey, if somebody came into your branch and they had a power of attorney, at what point do you start to get nervous that this power of attorney is a little bit too old? Now, you understand that in the banking scheme, they control your money. They're the ones who are paying, bill pays, check writing, everything else. So this was a good barometer of how often should we actually look at this thing called estate planning. And almost every single one of them, like probably 23 out of 25, almost every single one of them, a very high percentage, said, we really do not want to see a document that is more than 3 years old. If we see a document that is more than 3 years old, we start to get a little bit nervous. Now, if a bank gets nervous, what that means is that they're going to have to do a review process, or they're going to have to send it to their local counsel. And what that is doing is it is beginning to slow down the process of the individual you've named to assist you at this point in time. They are going to have to make more trips. It is going to be more difficult for them to get authority over your accounts and keep your financial life moving smoothly. So this drill of estate planning is oftentimes, even though I say it's for you to make sure you're well taken care of, but it's likewise for the person who is going to step in and assist you. That is the person who is going to pay the price if you have old documents. And that is not a smooth transition. A smooth transition means that we have the most up-to-date documents that will give that individual the easiest time assisting you. So banks, almost every single one of them said, we don't want to see a document more than 3 years old. So therefore, that's our barometer. Hmm. You should be thinking about your estate plan and having it reviewed every 3 to 5 years as a maximum. Hmm. And yet, most people overshoot that by a long shot. It's 10 years, 15, and like you said, way into 20 years old. So we got to stop that cycle. This is too important. You being cared for is too important. You making sure that the person who's going to step in and assist you or close your estate, their time and energy and emotional energy is too important just to not come and sit down or pay a fee to an attorney to make sure that everything is done. So we got to do a better job at updating things.
Okay, moving on to another myth. Probate in Washington is easy.
Oh, yes, boy. And as a matter of fact, I've heard this from other attorneys. And I'm not sure why they make such a claim.
Don't have a state income tax, which helps.
Correct. And we also don't have a probate fee. Our probate fee is very low as well in Washington, and that is the truth. So yes, if not writing checks means that it's easy, then they're right. But that's not what I qualify as easy. Now, I'm also licensed in Michigan. I don't practice there anymore, but I still hold my license there. Now, they have a probate fee, or at least when I was there, they had. I haven't looked it up in a while, but I'm going to still say they do. And so that means that any assets that are coming through the probate system, and many states do have this, California, Florida, multiple states, that so let's say I have a $1 million estate. And all $1 million has to funnel through the probate system. So it has to go through the court system when I die. Then they will say, let's say it's a 2% fee. Well, 2% of $1 million, if my math is correct, that's $20,000. Is my math right? Yeah, because 10% would be 200 and 1% of that, take off another zero. See, that's how I do math. So so now we've got $20,000 that the estate would have to write to the court system. Okay, that's how many systems operate. Washington does not have that fee. We pay just a fee to start a case. And so if I was in a car accident and I needed to sue somebody, it would be the same fee to start that case as it would be to start a probate. So it's not an expensive court system. But to me, that does not mean that it is easy. And we also have a thing in Washington which allows the court to stay at bay, non-intervention. So in other words, the court is not going to set out a scheduling order. It's not going to tell you when to report back. It's, in other words, they're going to stay on the outsides of it and allow the personal representative or executor is how another term people use, that the executor is going to have a lot of flexibility to close the estate as they need without the court coming in and raising a bunch of flags. So both of those things are great systems in Washington. No fees, and the court stays out of our business until somebody says, hey, court, come and intervene. Now, the fallacy in that makes it easy is that who then is guiding you and who then is actually making sure that you are abiding by your duties according to the law? Because if you are going to take the responsibility of closing an estate, there are definitive duties that you must do. There are notices. There's ways that you are required to close an estate according to the law. Otherwise, you could have a bullseye on your back. And by the way, Most estates that I need to close through the probate process, I have found take much longer than having a private family closing process through a trust mechanism. And so my own experience, just as I watch it, is that I would rather stay away from the court system and being under their jurisdiction at all if we can avoid it. And so it's not that they're going to swoop in and that it's a hard process as far as quote unquote the process through the system itself, but that doesn't alleviate you of your duties to perform your job well and to make sure that there are certain things that each beneficiary is receiving through the process, like an accounting and other things. So, therefore, the other question I would have is with this myth, probate is easy, is I would look at an attorney and I would say, then guarantee it. Guarantee me that it's going to be easy. And that's where the argument ends. Mm. There is nobody who will guarantee that a probate will be easy. So they use it as a bailout to not think through estate planning very well. But in my experience so far, probate has been anything but easy. Are there some that close quickly? Absolutely. More than 50%? I would say no. I would actually say no. More than 50% of anything that goes to probate actually needs additional time. And so it's not as simple and straightforward. So I prefer that we have a private closing instead of a public closing. Let me say this here with this question as we wrap up our time today. How do you get to probate? You get to probate because you have something in your name and that asset needs to be transferred by the personal representative and they need to legally be able to sign your name. Because if I'm dead, great revelation, I can't sign my name anymore. So therefore, someone else has to have the legal authority. That's what a probate process is doing. We take the original will, we get a judge to say, yes, this is the original, and this person is supposed to represent Paul because he died. That's the simplicity of what probate is doing. But we have duties to two major people, to creditors and to beneficiaries. So not just to beneficiaries, it is also to creditors. Someone needs to guide you through that process. I would rather sidestep that process and make sure that there's a smoother way. Is there a smoother way? Absolutely. So I don't think probate is easy, and I can't guarantee that it's going to be easy. So therefore, I don't like probate.
Okay, just got through a couple of the myths of estate planning. We'll continue this discussion next time. People are intrigued, though, Paul. They want to know more about your services. How do they get in touch with you?
Head over to legacyandfaith.com, past podcasts, ways to communicate with us, and upcoming educational sessions. Head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.